I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. on Monday, March 26, 2018. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee member presents are Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. We are expecting Senator Geisel. Today we'll take up and hear again Senate Bill 193, Medicaid Assistance Work Requirement by Senator Kelly, and House Bill 215, DHSS Public Health Fees by the House Finance Committee. We'll also take up today for the first time House Bill 176, Medical Emergency Transport and Service Payments. First up is Senate Bill 193. We heard and took public testimony on this bill on March 12th. The following people are here in the room to answer questions: Monica Windham, Director of Public Assistance, and John Sherwood, the Deputy Commissioner of Medicaid and Healthcare Policy, is also here in the room. This afternoon, we have a committee substitute containing the recommended changes by the sponsor, Work Draft 30-LS1349/J. Is there a motion to adopt this as our working document? Senator Von Imhoff.
Yes, I move to adopt Work Draft 30-LS139/J as our working document.
I'll object to hear the changes. At this time, I'd like to invite Heather Carpenter from Senator Kelly's office before us. If you could state your name and affiliation and proceed when ready.
Good afternoon, Chair Wilson and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Heather Carpenter, staff to Senator Kelly. I provided an explanation of changes document, which I will walk through, that speaks to the new CS. The changes are found on page 2, line 1. We add caregiving to be consistent in our language with the exemptions. Also on page 2, lines 19 through 21, we added three more exemptions to be consistent with ATEP, which is the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program, and the CMS guidance letter on the 1115 program specific to applying for Medicaid work requirements. Those exemptions include G, pregnant, which I spoke to you about when we first presented Senate Bill 193, H, currently receiving unemployment insurance benefits. The reason for that change is that program already has a work requirement, so that way we're not being duplicative in requiring this work and making the department see if somebody is working that's on an unemployment insurance when Department of Labor already does that. Both of those changes, and I, participating in a tribal work program, that one did come specifically from the CMS guidance letter. All three of those were in agreement with the department. Page 2, lines 22 through 27, we added a new subsection 4 that contains two temporary exemptions, and that again is to be consistent with our temporary assistance program. The exemptions include A, if you're experiencing a family hardship outside of the control of the parent or caretaker, such as a death in the family or immediate crisis for the duration of the hardship, and B, if you are a victim of domestic violence. And finally, there were some conforming changes to the subsection numbering. Mr. Chair, that's all of the changes that are contained in the CS.
Thank you. At this time, I will move my objection. Are there further objections? Seeing none, the CS is adopted. Are there final questions or any additional questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So through the chair, we will be seeing this in Senate Finance, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes, Senate Finance is the next committee of referral.
Is the next committee, okay. So I will be then, just to give everyone a heads up, certainly asking about the fiscal notes of the different departments, because there's a wide variety of fiscal notes that I think we just need to have some clarification on.
And just before we respond for that, I believe Deputy Commissioner Sherwood provided us with a summary and sort of summarize all those physical notes all into one. No, take it. At ease. I'll go back on the record and welcome Senator Geisel to committee. And committee members being passed out now is a letter from Deputy Commissioner Sherwood on the combined physical notes. Senator Von Imhoff.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. We will review.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Seeing or hearing none, is there a motion to move this bill out of committee? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Thank you. I move CS for Senate Bill 193, version 30-LS1349/J, from committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal notes.
Is there objection to move this bill out of committee? Seeing or hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 193, version J, is moved from the committee with the understanding that legislative legal is authorized to make any necessary technical conforming adjustments. We'll take an ID to sign the documents. Back on the record. Next this afternoon, we'll take up House Bill 215. We heard and took public testimony on March 21st. I'll invite Elizabeth Dumont, staff to Representative Seaton, and Jill Lewis from the Division of Health and Public Services to the table for any final questions from committee members.
Sorry.
Yes, it does. We did. Back on the record, are there any questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Any amendments? Seeing and hearing none, is there a motion to move this bill from committee? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 215, version 30-LS0673/O, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 215, version O, is moved from committee with the understanding that Ledge Legal has the authority to make any necessary technical and conformity adjustments. We'll take another ID to sign the paperwork. Back on the record. Lastly, we have House Bill 176, Emergency Medical Transport Service Payments. We have Representative Wool and his staff, Robert Earl, at the table. We want to welcome them and to present the bill, and you guys may present when ready. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Adam Wool. I represent District 5 in Fairbanks, and with me is Rob Earl, my legislative assistant. We're very happy to present House Bill 176, and it's an emergency medical transport bill, which allows the state to collect additional money from the Medicaid, federal Medicaid, to more fully compensate, reimburse the state for emergency medical transport, both ambulance and air. So currently our fire departments and EMS services are compensated only a fraction of their costs associated with transporting Medicaid beneficiary. This bill will allow Department of Health and Social Services to request that the federal government amend Alaska's Medicaid plan to include supplemental reimbursements for emergency medical transport. The feds approved the amended plan. Our fire departments can recoup up to about 50% of their current uncompensated costs. And we have a flow chart here that Rob will run you through to show you how the money gets moved around. And if it's a tribal transport, they'll get 100% reimbursement. Program should take about 12 to 18 months to implement. The bill is cost neutral to the state. Other states have similar programs are California, Washington, Missouri, Nevada, Texas, and Florida. Programs are pending in Oregon, Nebraska, Kansas, and Illinois. Just to give you some numbers, last year there were 21,000 claims for ground transport in Alaska. $800 was unreimbursed on average for each of these transports. That total is $17 million. 2% of these were tribal, so half of 17 is $8.5 million. So the state would net a little over $8.5 million if this program was in place last year. For air transport last year, there's 281 claims, and those averaging $17,000 in unreimbursed Medicaid costs. So this is about, the total was $17,000 unreimbursed, which is $5 million in unreimbursed costs. And so of that $5 million, the state would get $2.5 million. So $2.5 plus $8.5. Last year, if this program was in place, the state of Alaska would receive $11 million additional dollars from the federal Medicaid system. So there's a slight admin cost, but that gets passed on to the provider, the transport provider, and the federal government. So the state incurs no costs at all to this program. And we have an example that we can run through with a flowchart, and I will let Rob Earl do that. We also have online Margaret Brody from the department and Rich Etheridge, the fire chief from Juneau.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earl, staff representative Wall. This is the flowchart that hopefully is in your packet. So you can see there are four circles, or one's an oval, but I'll call it a circle. Notice that the two blue circles are both Alaska State Department of Health and Social Services. The left blue circle is as Medicaid is currently being reimbursed, and the right blue circle is what this bill would accomplish. The red circle is the provider, usually a fire department or a municipality, and the green circle is the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So there are six arrows which are numbered, and by the way, all these dollar amounts are hypothetical just for showing the flow of the money purposes. So someone has an accident and calls an ambulance. Arrow number one, hypothetically that ambulance cost $1,000 for the total initial cost. Currently state Medicaid under arrow number two would pay about $400 of that, leaving $600 of uncompensated costs, UCC. So now if HB 176 becomes law, the supplemental program would go into effect. Under arrow number three, the provider would send their non-federal share of 50% of the uncompensated costs to the department. And then the department would hold that money in escrow and request that the federal CMS send the federal share. So that's arrows four and five. So now the department is holding $600, and they send that federal share and non-federal share back to the provider. But if you see in the third sentence in that box in the bottom right, the provider only recoups $700 of a $1,000 cost, because $300 of that $600 that they received under arrow number six was their own money that they sent to the department under arrow number three. So that's basically the flow of money, and we stand open to questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from committee members? Senator Von Neuhoff.
Thank you. So some of this, of course, depends on timing, because if $1,000 is spent on the transport, and then there's a delay of getting the $400 back from state Medicaid, but at the same time, the $300 is going to go back to the state in order to get their match, the provider could conceivably be out $1,300 until he starts getting the money back in. Maybe. I mean, I guess there's a – does this bill address timing, or just sort of up to the provider, depending on their cash flow?
I believe that the provider would have some money in their cash account. So they submit the bill to Medicaid for their $400 reimbursement. Simultaneously, they could send out the $300 to the department to start the federal process going. So the $1,000 that the service costs, I guess they could be out that too, although it's not cash. It's more just the service that they provide. And they would be waiting for the $400 to come in. And since it hasn't happened here, I don't know if they wait for the $400 before they send the $300. My guess is not. They would just have $300 available to send it out.
Hopefully,
yes. And Rich Etheridge behind us from the fire department might be able to answer that a little more from experience.
All up, Senator?
Well, I think that's the little question. You had talked earlier in your presentation, and I'll hold that question in regards to we could save $11 million, and I may have more specific questions because I'm looking at the fiscal notes, and I know this will be seen at Senate Finance, so I don't want to go down that route too far, but since you brought it up, I wouldn't mind at least getting a little bit more clarification, but I don't mind waiting for other more structural bill questions to flow through the committee first.
I have the same question, so please proceed.
Okay. When I'm looking at the fiscal notes, do you think that this is going to be what is the net savings to the state versus the cost to the state? Because I'm seeing two fiscal notes, and I want to make sure I'm reading these correctly. The first one from the Department of Health and Social Services, Appropriation Health Care Services, Medical Assistant Administration. So there's going to be a person to help administer this. So that's about $116,000.
Yes.
Then on the next page, it says Department of Health and Social Services, Medicaid Services, Health Care Medicaid Services. Is this out of out-year cost estimates what it is now without the bill, or is the state going to, and how do I read this, another $21 million, or what's what does that say?
Through the chair, Representative Senator Von Imhoff. So going to the first fiscal note, OMB component number 2077, you can see under the fund sources, the $11.1 million is the federal receipts. So that is the amount of money going from the green circle on the diagram back to the department. And this is the amount that the state, the state's providers will be receiving supplemental in Medicaid reimbursements. The $10.7 million, that is the amount that the department is sending to, or sorry, the provider is sending to the department and then receiving back themselves. So that money is just kind of pass-through money. Looking at the other fiscal note, which is OMB component number 242, this is the cost to, for the state to run the program, but this cost is entirely borne by the provider 50% and by the federal government at 50%, and we can see that on page 3 of the first fiscal note, the 2077.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat what I just heard. So essentially the state is going to receive from the federal government on fiscal year 2020, $11.167 million under this program, and then the state is going to take receipt of $10.731 million from the various different providers throughout the year, and then the state will turn around and pay to the providers $21,898,000,000.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, if I may, Mr. Chair, through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, basically the provider pays out in this fiscal note $10.7 million, and then they receive back $21.8 million. I mean, this is all combined. This is all the providers, not just one. So, in aggregate. So basically they're paying 10 to get 20 in a sense. So they're getting they have to put up half and they get back the full payment.
I guess that just a clarifying question then, I think that might help folks. So the local municipalities are putting up the state's 50% to get the federal match, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I think that was sort of mixed somehow, wasn't very clear, I think, for some folks.
Yeah, if I may, through the chair and to the chair. This concept causes people to ask a lot of questions about it because it's not really – it's a little confusing in that the state portion is paid by the provider. The state holds on to the half, and then they bill out the feds. They get the other half back, and then they give both halves back. It's a little awkward, but it's how the system works.
Okay. Thank you. We just want to make sure you're finished with that.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question in a moment.
Okay.
Senator Baggage.
Just a very quick question. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So, Representative Wolf, the provider is in all cases under this scenario, the provider is a municipal government, or it's a government that's sending that money to the state, or is it going to be from both public and private providers?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Begich, it's available only to public providers.
If I can follow up briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So essentially, instead of the state paying the $10 million, the local governments are paying the $10 million, and that's how we're triggering the Medicaid match.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, and this was brought up earlier, in the past, the state wasn't paying the money, and therefore the state never received the money. It was just the loss was incurred by the provider, whether it be the fire department or the municipal government. So it wasn't money that was lost. It just never was gained. And now we're trying to recoup some of these costs. Other states are doing it, and we're saying, why don't we do this also? And it's through a certain title of Medicaid. I forget which title. Rob probably knows. It's available, and Alaska wants to take advantage of it. So the state wasn't losing the money. It was really the municipal governments that were not getting compensated. So if they had a $1,000 ambulance ride, they only got $400. They just said, okay, that's life. And this will help them get closer to their $1,000.
Then I do have one last follow-up.
Yeah. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, you know, there are proposals to cut back some of the federal Medicaid funding, and I brought this question up every time a Medicaid bill's come to us. What would be the impact of this law passing if indeed the federal Medicaid funding was cut back?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I'm glad you asked that question. If the funding goes away, the program goes away. If there's no funding for it, there's no liability. There's no liability to the state. So it doesn't cost anything to implement the plan. It doesn't cost anything if the funding should go away.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Representative Wohl, Moose Pass and Cooper Landing both have volunteer fire departments and emergency responders. How do they fit into this?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, my community, Fairbanks, has many of those too. So they would be through the municipality. The municipality handles the money disbursement back to the. If they have a contract right now with the municipal government, then that would continue to be the case. And again, maybe someone in the fire industry could help me more detailed. But yes, they will be covered as well. But in the end, the money that the HESC gets from the federal government goes to the municipality, which then has the discretion to disperse it to volunteer fire department or city fire department or whoever is providing the service.
Follow up, Senator Giesel?
Only to mention that Senator Machicki, who has Cooper Landing and Moose Pass, pointed out that the Kenai Peninsula Borough actually would be the billing institution, the billing government agency. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
So just to ask this a little bit more simply, in a $1,000 example, instead of the fire department receiving $400, by going through the state, they would be available for the federal match billed through the state for $300 additional dollars. Is that an easier way to explain it?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. Yes, sir. Thank you for that.
And Mr. Chairman, and that's at no additional cost to the state, if I'm correct in that as well.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that's correct.
Yeah, Senator Vonnehoff.
So you mentioned earlier that it's available for municipalities. So I don't know how often, if this occurs at all, if a private carrier, Alaska Airlines, may carry someone to Anchorage or Fairbanks. Are they able to be compensated under this program?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. So contractors can be compensated under the program if they do not have a direct relationship with Medicaid. If they do have a direct relationship with Medicaid, then I don't think it would work out. But the department could plan so that better than I.
Okay.
And we do have Margaret Boating on the line from the Division of Healthcare Services, that she may be able to answer some questions as well. Maybe we can propose that when we get to invited testimony.
Senator?
Actually, I have a question for Ms. Brody to make sure that I got it right, but I do have a question for the sponsor as well. Have you heard any interest from the municipalities on sharing the cost of the position, which would be the only additional cost to the state? At $116,000 the initial year and then $109,000 afterward?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, this bill will be at zero cost to the state. The providers will pay half of the cost, and the federal government will pay the other half.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki.
So the interagency receipts of the position at $116,000 is paid the same way that the other funding is paid in the bill for the match?
Through the chair, I don't believe it's exactly the same way. That might be a better question for the department.
And I had a similar sort of question. If we're taking, the state of Alaska, we're taking a percentage off of some of the fees coming back, so that it can be a little bit more cost neutral for the state. But I do understand the significance of this. It's a huge concern for some of our folks in the MATSU that have sort of asked about this for a couple of years now, that's my understanding. So I like the concept, but I just want to make sure that it is more of a cost neutral to the state. Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, if the OMB component number, fiscal note 242, is correct, the reason it's interagency is that it would be collected from providers who participate in the program via a reimbursable services agreement. So we can ask Ms. Brody that as well, I think.
All right. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a list of folks for invited testimony, but first we'll go to Margaret Brody, Director of Division of Healthcare Services. She's on the line to answer a couple of questions. Ms. Brody, are you with us today?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Would you like to, I guess, if Senator Machicki could repeat the questions that...
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brody, two questions. Am I correct in that the difference is simply the $300 in a $1,000 example, the $300 that munis can't bill directly through Medicaid? This bill allows the state to bill Medicaid and then provide that $300 difference to the municipalities?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is correct. They would be providing the match for us to draw down the federal $300.
Thank you. So that's at no cost to the state. And then also in component number 242, the cost of the position will be funded from fees collected from those providers, which I assume is also the munis via a reimbursable services agreement.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, that funding would be provided at the same time as the other match.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Brody? Senator Von Imhoff.
Yes, thank you. So one of the questions that I asked earlier is, I said, if there is by chance a private carrier, and I gave the example Alaska Airlines, would they able to be qualified for a reimbursement, maybe if they work through the municipality or something of that nature?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, not unless they were associated with a government entity. So if they are not associated with a government entity, they would not be able to take advantage of this.
Yes, please follow up.
Are there private carriers that provide transport in and around Alaska? Do you know of, or does this just not occur?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes, there are private carriers in the state.
Additional question?
No.
All right. Senator Baggage.
Yes, Director Brody, just to follow up on that last question. So there are private carriers, and if they have a contract with government, then that is the relationship you're describing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Baggage, yes, the government entity would have to be the one that builds the Medicaid program.
continue, Senator Begich?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. But what I'm asking is just to try to get more clarity on the question Senator Von Imhoff was asking is just, but if that private entity had a contract with the government, the local government, whether it's the borough in Kenai or Fairbanks or wherever, could then compensate back the private entity, right?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that would be up to the contract that they had with the actual municipality to see if that money could be passed along to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Senator Machik?
Yeah, Ms. Brody, could you give us, I think, for a little bit more comfort for the committee, I mean, just can you give us a hypothetical at Central Peninsula Hospital, which is a government-owned hospital, there ends up being a case that has to be airlifted to Anchorage. That private company could then bill through the Kenai Peninsula Borough to the state. The state puts in for the additional match, and again, at no cost to the state, there's just an additional match available for the local governmental body that has contracted with that carrier.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, if they had a contract with Central Peninsula Hospital, that is correct.
Okay. Any other questions, additional questions for Director Brody? Seeing none, thank you for your time. If you can stay online for maybe some additional questions, if you can. First up for invited testimony is Chief Jeff Tucker from Kenai. Jeff, if you could state your name and affiliation and begin your invited testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I'm also the fire chief for the city of Kenai Fire Department. I'm calling today in support of House Bill 176. We call the GMET bill the Red Emergency Medical Transport Bill. GMET is a supplemental reimbursement program that falls under Title 19 of the Social Security Act, which I think was questioned earlier. As was stated earlier, several states have already enacted this program. It's been available to providers for years, but we just haven't taken advantage of it. This bill is the first step for Alaska public EMS providers to be eligible for this federal reimbursement. Currently, ambulance service in Alaska, we only get a fraction of the cost for providing Medicaid transports, as has been outlined before, and a large percentage of our patients are Medicaid patients. 31% of the patients transported by the city of Kenai are Medicaid patients, and there are similar percentages found across the state. There's zero cost to the state general fund, and this program goes away. The state is not responsible for it. All the costs for DHS to provide this service through the program of our submissions and reimbursements from the federal government is paid for, so there is no cost to the state for this program. Our reimbursement dollars and the federal reimbursement dollars will pay for the program. The program is optional for each community. Every community has a choice whether to participate or not. The federal dollars reimbursing the local communities for expenses we've already incurred. That $1,000 transport is a $1,000 transport. We're only getting reimbursed for a small fraction of that. So the local taxpayers are already supplementing the federal government for the cost of that transport. And in turn, we're already paying taxes into this federal program. So we're just getting the reimbursement for dollars we've already spent locally to fund the local services. There's no impact to the existing Alaska Medicaid program. Again, if it goes away at the federal level, it goes away totally. The Alaska Medicaid program has no affiliation with it. These funds, most importantly, come back to the EMS department to continue providing care for the patients we transport. HB 176 has a real and direct impact to the communities across Alaska who provide ambulance services. There's been several examples set forth in the correspondence on this bill. For the city of Kenai, we're looking at approximately, for the uncollected fund, that's looking at $200,000 back to the city of Kenai and potential reimbursements for this program. And that's really no small sum for us. One of the questions that were asked earlier about the timing on the collections of having to submit all the time. As the program is set up, we can look at, and as the program is designed, a one time a year, quarterly, or such submittals to get reimbursed. So we're not constantly putting money up, getting it back, putting money up, getting it back. When the program's eventually set up, it'll be, you know, at the beginning of the fiscal year or quarterly throughout the year or however the program is designed. So it's an easy way for communities to budget and plan for the program. Again, I want to thank you for your time. I would like to ask for your support in passing HB 176, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Chief Tucker. Any questions for Chief Tucker, Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you. So I think perhaps one of my concerns is that with this extra money, municipalities may expand their EMS department. And then to go with Senator Begich's question, if and when this particular program goes away, we have to go through the painful process of decreasing the department. Another thought is perhaps will this additional federal money offset local taxes, or is the fiscal relief going to be trickled down to the local taxpayer?
Senator, through the chair, that would be up to the municipality or the agency, you know, who's receiving the funds. The funds that we collect through this program are to go to, you know, funding the EMS programs provided by the communities. Now, obviously, if the city of Kenai, for example, gets $200,000 in reimbursement, will they offset, by general fund dollars, by $200,000 to support my department and use those funds elsewhere? That's up to the local community. You know, will we expand the service, you know, EMS services with the anticipation these funds will last forever? Hopefully, municipalities and EMS providers will take that into consideration, that this is not, potentially not there forever. It is a federal program. Federal programs can go away. But there's no indication. This is an entitlement program that's separate from other programs, and, you know, there's no indication this program will go away anytime soon, but again, that's local decisions.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Hello there, Chief Tucker. Question for you, just making sure that, I mean, of course, your billing agency would be the city of Kenai, since you're not CES, is that correct?
That's correct, Senator. Yes. Through the chair.
So I just wanted to ask the question in understanding liability. So private insured, non-Medicaid eligible, and non-Medicaid charity care would not become a liability of the state. That would stay the same as it is. It's just simply Medicaid eligible billing. The state would secure the additional match for you. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes. No, that is correct, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Andrew Giesel.
Thank you. Chief Tucker, of course you can't speak for all of the municipalities and boroughs, but let's say you did get back $200,000. Many times EMS fire departments come to the state asking for updated oxygen units or mechanized CPR devices to upgrade your equipment. Is this $200,000 something that would be used to purchase those kinds of things?
Through the chair, Senator, again, that would be up to the municipality of how they would use this funding. The programs, the grant funding programs, the Code Blue programs that you're speaking about, are vital to the state. I think those programs are used to, especially by the smaller EMS agencies around the state, to fund their programs. This is obviously driven by, the amount of responses and the percentage of reimbursement that the community can get. Will that assist in providing services? Absolutely. Will that offset all the total needs for the community? Probably not. It just helps getting us back to square one as far as our reimbursed cost for providing those services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. One more.
Senator Machicki.
So, Senator Giesel also talked about places like Moose Pass and Cooper Landing that are tiny little departments barely hanging on that have to respond to, 20,000 vehicle weekends coming through their communities in the summer. But, Chief, what took us so long to get on this discover the program? How long has it been in place, and how did it get by us all these years?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. My understanding of the history of the program, and Chief Etheridge is sitting in the room with you there, he may have a better history of it. It's apparently been on the books for 30 years, and it was a series of fire chiefs, a set of fire chiefs in the state of California, who discovered that this, language was in, the federal legislation, that allowed us to do this. California was the first state to, enact, GMET legislation. It's spread through the, through the western states, Oregon, Washington State, hopefully Alaska here soon, but other states, as was mentioned by Representative Wolf, Florida, Texas, and other states have realized this is a benefit. For us to, get this reimbursement, it takes the inaction of the legislation, and then it takes us doing, the process with the federal government to do it. But it's one of those things, gosh, I wish we would have known about it 20 years ago, but we didn't, But we do know now about it, and we'll be able to, hopefully take advantage of a program that we've been paying for as taxpayers, for these years to help better fund, local EMS providers.
Thank you.
Right. Any other questions for Chief Tucker? Thank you, Chief. I know you got the brunt of the questions going first, and I appreciate your service, and thank you for staying along and answering questions. Next here for invited testimony, we'll go to here to Juneau, to Chief Rich Etheridge here in Juneau. Chief, you can state your name and affiliation, and you may begin when ready.
Thank you. My name is Richard Etheridge. I'm the fire chief here in Juneau, and I'm also representing the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association represents well over 100 departments from one end of the state to the other. So, we collaborate regularly, and this is the highest priority for our organization at this time. The GEMT program, House Bill 176, will provide desperately needed relief to departments. As you may be aware, the call for medical services is climbing drastically. Here in Juneau, just in the last 3 years, our call volume has increased by 26%. And we don't receive any additional staffing or additional funds based on that. 25% of our medical transports are Medicaid patients. And as the example was given earlier of a $1,000 cost for a medical transport, we receive approximately $400 back. The rest of that money is just borne by our taxpayers here locally. So what this program will do is it'll give us half of that money back that the taxpayers are already putting out there. So it's a little bit of cost recovery for us. It doesn't make us whole for the entire cost, but it does help out quite a bit. For our department particularly, we are short-staffed where it comes to ambulances, and this program would help us put another ambulance on the road to help reduce the delays patients are receiving right now for medical care. A question had come up earlier about private entities being able to benefit from this program. One of the examples that we would have here locally would be some of the local helicopter companies, whereas they don't bill the patients directly. They bill us for their services, and then we don't have a great mechanism for recovering those costs. So because the companies are billing us, that becomes part of the cost of us providing services. So they're still receiving the money for those flights. This is it's an amazing program. The fire chief in Sacramento, California discovered this, I think he said back in 2011. I'm not certain on the date, but they were having similar financial issues, call volumes increasing, and they found this. And right after they retired, they started a consulting firm and traveling to other departments and presenting at chiefs associations, just showing us that these programs are out there to help our departments. So as you've heard, this has gone through many other states now, hopefully Alaska soon. This program has, no cost to the general fund for the state of Alaska, and it will put money back into the local municipalities. It can relieve tax burden on citizens, or it can be, a supplement to what's already budgeted for. It just depends on how the local municipality wants to budget that funds coming in. But the funds coming back in do have to go towards the care of Medicaid patients. We're really excited to bring this program forward. As you guys mentioned earlier, departments are always coming to you guys for equipment and apparatus and buildings and things like that. This may help slow some of those requests down because, you know, it does go to the municipality to figure out how they want to allocate those funds. But, you know, this doesn't, you know, replace like the Code Blue program that many departments, you know, depend on for ambulances and basic medical supplies. Just the city of Juneau, we anticipate this program could bring in about $600,000. The fire chief in Anchorage, when I talked to him, they were estimating that this will cover about $4 million of their costs. And also in the way the costs are allocated, it's cheaper to do an ambulance run in Anchorage because of, you know, the number of ambulances and the number of transports they're doing. So if you go to the community of Moose Pass, where they still have to have staffing and an ambulance and all the medical supplies and in the buildings. So whereas Anchorage might get $1,000 cost for that run, it could be, you know, $2,000 to a community like Moose Pass. So the dollar figures might not be as large in the lump sum at the end, but proportionately, it makes a huge difference. The previous fire chief in Hoonah told me his training budget was like $1,200 for the entire year. So just the influx of just even a few thousand dollars would greatly benefit small departments like that. That's all I have to present, and I'm definitely open to questions.
I guess I have a question on this. What type of training or paperwork does your departments or other departments need to do to be able to comply? Because, you know, Medicaid billing is not always the easiest for some folks. So is that beyond the municipality, or is that the state of Alaska that will help with that?
We do have to get a cost program approved by the federal government. The contractor that the State Chiefs Association has contracted with is willing to help write that to get that approved. That way it takes some of the burden off the state of Alaska, but it will be up on the local departments to fill out an annual cost report and submit the data to Health and Social Services.
Thank you. Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chief Etheridge, did I hear correctly something about it being 12 to 18 months to get this program approved? Perhaps that's a question for the sponsor, but do you know how long it will take? I mean, you have a contractor or someone who's going to help you write this up. How long, what's the horizon on this one?
Yes, ma'am. That 12 to 18 months definitely can be accurate. The company we're working with has done this several times now, so they've already hit many of the hurdles. They created a program for the state of California that turned into a $110 million program. And they made their mistakes, you know, implementing California's. So they took the lumps for us and missed out on some of those dollars. So I would anticipate that it would be on the shorter end of the time frame to get it implemented in Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von den Hoff.
Thank you. So, Chief Etheridge, I just have two questions. You said California Fire Chief found this program. They created a consulting firm, and now they're going on the road to let everybody know of this fabulous program. I'm certainly glad that Alaska's participating. Do you have any sense that as soon as the cat is out of the bag and everyone's putting pressure on this federal program that's been a sleeping giant for 30 years, that all of a sudden they're maybe putting the brakes on it because it's going to go from a couple hundred million to a year to billions?
Through the chair, yes, that's definitely a risk. But the way we look at it is if we could even bring in, you know, some money into the state of Alaska, it's not really costing us any additional to implement this program. So any dollars we get back in to our communities would definitely help us out. So even if it went away, you know, after we were able to get reimbursed, you know, for the first payment, we're still not out anything for that.
Yeah, Senator Von der Paul.
Being on the Healthcare Blueprint Committee, one of the concerns that we have is bending the cost of growth of healthcare. And by bringing in new money, and even if it's federal money and not state money, that doesn't necessarily bend the growth of healthcare. What it generally does is expand it, because then there's new areas to spend it on. Do you have any sense of, I know you touched upon it by trickling down the relief to local taxpayers, as in the budget may offset be the same kind of thing. It just, have you talked about that in your Chiefs of Chiefs group?
Yeah. Through the chair, that definitely comes to where it takes good fiscal management from the department, knowing that those funds could go away at any time, that they either need to be able to have a tax base that could support the programs that they've built. In our case, you know, we have a desperate need to put on an additional ambulance. We don't have the funds currently, but you know, if we can get it in place and functioning, then you know, it would be easier for long-term planning. So we've got an immediate need right now to put staffing on, and then we have time over the next several years to, you know, start adjusting budgets for it. So we just take careful fiscal management.
Senator Geisel.
Chief Etheridge, we're talking here in this bill about Medicaid beneficiaries. So let's expand the conversation to private pay, private insurance folks. There is a very large business group in Anchorage that is extremely upset about the high cost of not only insurance premiums, but fundamentally the cost of health care and Medivacs particularly. One of the numbers cited to me, someone needing a Medivac from Kenai, the Kenai Airport to the Anchorage Airport, was $17,000. So is there cost shifting that occurs in medical transports? That is to say, somebody has to cover the Medicaid folks who are not fully reimbursing for the services. So are those costs shifted then to the private insurance folks?
Through the chair, we have to set a standard ambulance fees, whether it's Medivac or an ambulance transport. So we end up billing all of our patients the same amount. For the Medicaid patients, we have to write off whatever's not covered as bad debt for our department. So,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Chief Etheridge, is there a do you know how many current states currently have this program in place now?
I don't recall the exact number. It's been slowly growing. Last count, I think there was about 8 of them that were implemented at this time.
I can probably follow up with the sponsor of the bill. I just didn't know if you knew how many currently. So, all right. Any other questions for Chief Etheridge? Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
See no one else here for invited testimony. At this time, we'll open up to public testimony. On the phone, we have Brittany Smart from Fairbanks. Brittany, if you can state your name and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. This is Brittany Smart representing the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I work in the mayor's office. You have heard a lot of much more knowledgeable testimony than what I have for you today. In general, we would just like to add our voice in support of HB 176. The Fairbanks North Star Borough provides non-area-wide emergency medical services that are funded through a combination of service fees and tax levy. Similar to the statistics that you have received from other testifiers, we have approximately 30% of the patients that are transported by the borough EMS providers, and this currently results in approximately $430,000 in uncompensated costs that could be reimbursed through this program. So I thank you very much for your support and look forward to further conversation on this item. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Smart. Any questions for Ms. Smart?
What was the amount?
I'm sorry. Ms. Smart, what was the total amount again?
Uncompensated
costs.
For calendar year 2016, we accrued more than $430,000 in uncompensated costs.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Thank you for your testimony today, Ms. Smart.
Thank you, Chair.
Now we'll proceed to those folks here in Juneau. Anyone else here in the room would like to testify on HB 176? Seeing and hearing none and seeing no one else online, we'll go ahead and close public testimony at this time. I'd like to invite the Representative Wool and his staff back to committee to answer a couple follow-up questions. And Representative Wool, I just asked the same question I asked the chief here in Juneau. Do you know about how many states currently have...
Yes, thank you, Chair Wilson. We I count 6 that have it in place and 4 that are pending. And if you add Alaska, that would be 5.
Right. That's still in the early end.
And if I may, if we do institute this program, we won't tell anyone, so no other states will get on board.
Sounds good. Any other questions for the representative at this time? Any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing the bill. It obviously has a lot of support from municipalities and transportation providers. We didn't hear from any air transport. I think largely they're private that contract through municipalities. And I look forward to it progressing through, and I think we should take advantage of this program, and every little bit helps in this time.
Thank you. Senator Geisel.
So you just prompted another question in my mind. So let's say that that Raven Air transports the patient from Kenai to Anchorage. So they're going to bill the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And the Kenai Peninsula Borough, of course, is only going to get $400 out of 1,000, right? 40%. Out of Medicaid reimbursement for that Medicaid beneficiary. So who makes up the rest of that charge that Raven Air, I'm just picking, I know they transport there, maybe it's another company. Who makes up the rest of that?
Through the chair, Senator Geisel, from Chief Etheridge's testimony, it sounded like the provider pays the contract to the air transporter. He used the example of a helicopter, but that the municipality would be on the hook for that, and then they would try to get it reimbursed through Medicaid or for a Medicaid patient. But, again, this is the billing of the private contractor. I'm not – if a private contractor provides a service to transport a patient, I'm based on earlier testimony, that the municipality pays the air transporter. And now they're trying to recoup some of those costs.
Thank you. That's what I would construe also. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Just to put it another way, it's the EMS agency with jurisdiction for that particular place. So Kenai might be the city of Kenai, but it may also be Soldotna using the Kenai Airport through the borough, right? So it's whomever has jurisdiction, that's part of the responsibility they take on, and sometimes it's uncompensated altogether. Sometimes there's somewhat of a Medicaid match, and sometimes it's private pay. But when there's no one to pay, they're left holding the bag.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Machicki, I agree. And in some states, I don't think Alaska has too many private ambulance services where they would do the same thing with a private ambulance. But most of the ambulances in EMS services in Alaska are municipality run by the fire department or the local municipality.
And Ripple, I know this isn't for this committee, but this is the physical notes that we have here still have sort of the ground emergency, and that was I'm glad to see that they took out the ground out of the other body and just left it as emergency transport. Does that change these numbers any way, sense, or form? And I just didn't know, and that's, we can bring that up another time for, maybe that's a question for finance to ask that question for updated notes, if that would change or would not change it, or the department can get back to us at that time as well. You don't have to answer that now. Just
okay.
bring that forth.
Thank you.
A comment. Any other questions for the representative? Thank you again. This time we'll set this bill aside and we'll bring this back up at a later date. That concludes our business of HESS for the committee today. On Wednesday and Friday, we will have other bills previously heard and scheduled come before us. Are there any other members closing comments at this time?
Thank you.
Seeing or hearing none, we are adjourned at 2:36 p.m.